Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi folks, welcome to episode 34 of Epochs, where I'm joined by Bo, and we're going to be having a very festive look at Saturnalia, which is of course what we call now Christmas. Right, so as I understand it, and I'm no great expert on Saturnalia, but this was a Roman holiday in midwinter, in which they had kind of a general festive cheer and an inversion of the social structures of the time.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, some people say it's very trite to say that Saturnalia is like a Roman Christmas. It's not really at all. It just happens about the same time.
Yeah.
And the Christian versions of that have picked a couple of bits and bobs from it.
Yeah.
But so to call it sort of the Roman Christmas, you can do it, but it's a completely different thing. No, so that's the thing.
Right.
It's not a single day.
Right.
So first of all, one of the first things I'd like to say about it is that just Roman holidays in general are quite different. So they didn't have a weekend as we did. As we do, sorry, rather. You work every single day.
yeah,
the EU are going to do away with weekends. But yeah, they didn't have weekends as such. But what they did have is loads and loads of holiday days.
Yeah.
Loads throughout the year.
Yeah.
Like, depending on how generous the Senate and the Emperor will want to be. Sometimes 200 days of the year are holiday days, yeah. So it's quite odd to look at their calendar.
I recall watching a documentary a while ago that pointed out that Romans didn't work every day anyway. And like they were, you know, we're used to the sort of, you know, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And the Romans just didn't do that at all. And it was really bizarre watching it. So they might work 3 or 4 days a week just randomly throughout the week. And that just strikes me as a bizarre and uncoordinated way of having society. But I didn't realize it's up to 200.
Yeah, sometimes every year is different. There'll be like a few that are sort of state mandated, for want of a better word.
Right.
4 or 5 of them a year. Like the Lupercalia is probably the most famous one. Like young men dress up as wolves, and there's sort of a sexual undertone to that one. But the Saturnalia is probably Lupercalia and Saturnalia are the two biggest ones.
Right.
But so there'll be 4 or 5 or 6 sort of ones every single year at different points. But then loads of other ones sprinkled in. So the emperor might just have a triumph or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's seldom one day. Hmm. So the Saturnalia, its height is a week long.
Oh, okay.
And it usually started on the 17th of December.
Right.
So that's sort of what you're looking at. And sometimes some festivals could go on for a couple of weeks even. It was rare that it'd be just for one day. But the other thing is that Saturnalia lasted for so long. I mean, the first accounts seem to be sort of fourth century BC.
Hmm.
And it goes right through to sort of 4th century AD.
Right, so it's a really old tradition.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, it wouldn't have been celebrated in exactly the same way over all those centuries. Just like we don't celebrate Christmas as exactly as they did in the 1600s today,
no,
do we?
Of course,
it changes and morphs over time,
yeah.
As did the Saturnalia. However, there are certain elements that remained constant throughout it.
Right, okay.
So first of all, Saturnalia is sort of the festival of Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And so Saturn is sort of the Romanized version of Kronos. Mm. Kronos and Saturn are sort of the same thing. And they're sort of considered sort of much more the senior pantheon of gods.
Yes.
So right away, there's something to say about polytheism as opposed to monotheism. Because we're used to, in the West at least, really quite strict monotheistic traditions we grow up in, don't we? That,
yes.
You know, there's one God, he had one son who spoke the word, one book, one Bible, you know, which is exactly the same in Judaism and Islam as well. Yeah. It's sort of very much the oneness of things.
Yeah.
And so in polytheistic traditions, it's very, very different. You might have
crazy stories like Cronus eating his own children and vomiting them back up and things like this. And it's like, okay, what? Maybe it is just simpler to have one God, you know?
But like in the Hinduism, for example, you have sort of the senior ones. So if I think of sort of the Greek gods, you know, you've got Zeus and Hera and Apollo and Athena, and they're the senior ones that everyone's supposed to respect. But then there's all sorts of other, dozens and dozens of minor deities that you can pick and choose from. For example, your household, your particular household, might be a big fan or devotee or whatever of the god of the hearth, say, some random thing. Don't care about that, but household.
I like the framing of these as fandoms. This is really interesting, actually. I think that's a really interesting framing because that's genuinely how it feels. I mean, I went to Athens and you visit a temple of Asclepius or whatever. It's like, okay, so he's a god of medicine. Well, I mean, I guess you'd have particular care for him if you were sick, you know, you would want that. But if you're not sick, then, you know, if your family traditionally produced people who joined the army, you might have a shrine of Ares or something, wouldn't you? You know, it really is kind of like fandoms, you know, it's like, what are you into? Rather than like, you know, everyone's got the same nativity display or anything like that. It's fascinating.
Yeah, you can pick and choose, bit of a pick and mix sort of thing.
Which one's your favourite?
So for example, you know, like people were like the Krishna people, some Hindus are sort of Krishna devotees.
Yeah.
And the next house over don't care about Krishna particularly. But just as an example.
And it doesn't matter, you know.
That's... Yeah, it's sort of up to you as long as you're, as long as you aren't rude to sort of the most famous, biggest, most powerful deities.
Well, yeah, of course.
So in the Roman world, Saturn was one of the most senior ones. And so in the Forum, the Roman Forum, there was one of the biggest buildings there was a giant temple to Saturn. It's really quite important. And Saturn sort of, as most of the most important gods, sort of represent more than one thing. But he was sort of known for harvest and agriculture and the concept of rebirth. And also sort of a golden age. All golden ages are sort of associated with Saturn or Kronos, as well as sort of wealth and liberation. And so when we get into the details of Saturnalia, you'll see that sort of liberation and rebirth and also sort of harvest time and things, it all plays into it, even though it's the middle of December. Once again, just to stress, it would have been treated a little bit differently at different periods.
Yeah, but it does make sense for it to be in the middle of winter as well, because that's, you know, the sort of cycle of it going down and then coming back up, isn't it? You know, so
like the rebirth of the sun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As the days get shorter the days get shorter and shorter as you reach winter equinox.
Yeah.
But it's like the sun is dying.
Yeah.
Increasingly dying. And then after winter solstice, it's the rebirth of the sun itself.
Yeah. So it actually does make sense.
As you know, the 25th of December, our Christmas, and the 17th of December, neither of those are actually the solstice. It's like the 22nd of December. But again, we get into a bit murky because it's to do with calendars. Exactly the same calendar as we do.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it the just that the calendars have changed that position on the date? You know, because, I mean, like, you know, these things have changed a huge amount in the last 2,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're on the Gregorian calendar. After one of the medieval popes, one of the Gregories, it's almost identical, or it's very similar to the Julian calendar, which was instituted by Julius Caesar when he was Pontifex Maximus. And so, for example, the Eastern Orthodox Church have got a slightly different calendar to us because the Gregorian calendar is in the Catholic tradition, and well, they're not Catholic, and so it's a little bit different. That's why sometimes when you look at the dates in Russian history, they're a little bit different because they're on the Russian Orthodox calendar. This idea of the 25th of December, it only really applies to the Julian and Gregorian calendars.
And it kind of drives me mad as well, because December means the 10th month. It's the 12th month. How did that happen?
Well, because in the Roman times, in sort of classical Roman times, they only had 10 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They only had 10 months.
October, it's the 10th month, but it's called the 8th month. This is driving me crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, it's interesting, actually. Well, some people probably find it very dull, but I think it's kind of interesting. The way Julius Caesar reformed and adapted the sort of classical Roman calendar, and some things were kept and some names were kept. Like he added in July. That's after Julius Caesar.
And August.
And Augustus. After Augustus, yeah. So it kept getting tinkered with. And it's only really sort of constituted, written in stone in the Middle Ages, actually.
But isn't that wild? So, yeah, I'm just going to invent a new month. I mean, what are you going to call it? July. Okay, Julius.
Yeah.
As you say.
Yeah, we talk about having a bit of a shilling on yourself.
I know.
It's a bit of an ego.
That's mad, isn't it?
Well, just while we talk about that, just pop into my mind the way the French revolutionaries wanted to change the calendar. Oh, well, they wanted just 10 months again, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So it can totally be done. It can be done. You can reorganise the calendar.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're left with the 25th. And just to say on that, we don't know exactly why the Christians of the 5th century chose the 25th. Because obviously we can't be sure of when Jesus of Nazareth, if he's even real, we can't be sure exactly when he was born. We don't know. So they sort of had to pick a date out of... You know.
I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about this, and it's like shepherds watch their flocks by night. What, in the middle of winter? Maybe, you know, maybe he was, you know, but it doesn't matter. But like the point is, we don't know why the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
No reason.
Well, they had all sorts of like ecclesiastical councils where they decided things like what should be canon, like should the letters of Paul be part of the Bible or something? And when is Easter? When are we going to have Easter? And when are we going to have Christmas is one of them. When was the birth of Christ exactly? And they couldn't really, despite some important minds being set to it, they couldn't decide, they couldn't work it out exactly. So anyway, they chose the 25th and we're not exactly sure. But part of that, again, I'm just going to save some of this more for the end, but a big part of that is that they're trying to co-opt existing traditions.
Yeah, I've heard that that's the case. Is there substance to this?
Yeah, it seems to be.
Okay.
Because there's all sorts of pagan or non-Christian traditions. Well, the Saturnalia.
Yeah, yeah.
They were sort of trying to co-opt the Saturnalia. And we'll see all sorts of parallels, all sorts of different things that were taken and taken from directly from the Saturnalia, which aren't Christian at all.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, maybe we could just jump straight into it then.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
One of the things they had was a big temple to Saturn and a big statue of Saturn in the temple of Saturn, which some said was could possibly have been hollow and filled with olive oil. Got no more detail for you on that, but that could be the case.
It's a big statue of Saturn, yeah. And we'll make it hollow. Why? So we can fill it with olive oil. Why?
No good reason. Just
I just think Saturn would like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's the thing with all sorts of traditions, not just Christmassy ones, but why that?
Yeah.
And we don't know. It's just lost. Like, for example, this statue's feet were apparently all year round were covered in some sort of wrapping or twining or something. Mm-hmm. But during Saturnalia, they took that off. The priests took that off the feet of the statue of Saturn, and then when Saturnalia finished, they rewrapped it again, and that's how it stayed all year round. And there was a smaller statue, a wooden one of Saturn, which lived in the temple all year round, apart from Saturnalia, where the priests would take this statue, because quite often, you know, that's a long, well known tradition, is it, to have sort of an idol, to have a physical representation of the god, which you sort of treat as the god in a way. That's very, very ancient. Mm. So they had that one of Saturn, and the priests would take the smaller statue and take it somewhere else in the forum, so not very far.
Yeah.
And there would be a procession behind it, and it would be sort of set up on a couch. And again, they would wrap it with certain things, wrap it in twine and things.
Right,
I don't really know why. Well, I'm not sure why.
Well, I mean, this is a fairly ancient tradition of doing things with statues, though, in the ancient world. I mean... They used to have like religious processions with statues all the time. And it's like, okay, let's have fun. You know, glad you're having a good time.
Yeah,
enjoy. I'm sure the god's impressed. You
know? Well, so that was, well, you've hit the nail on the head. Exactly that. It's to impress the god.
Yeah.
Or to show that you have respect or even love for him.
Yeah, devotion.
And you sacrificed in his name. Mm. And the sacrifice for Saturn on Saturnalia was bulls. They'd always sacrifice.
Yeah.
And as Rome got more and more wealthy, more and more powerful, the train of bulls that they would sacrifice in the forum for Saturnalia became bigger and bigger, more and more elaborate. And apparently lots and lots of the citizenry of Rome would all go there and feast in the forum.
Yeah.
When these sacrificed bulls.
Because that's the thing, like people think, oh, they're sacrificing animals. Like, well, I mean, yes, but they are eating it afterwards.
Yes.
So it's not like they're wasting it, you know, they're not just like murdering it for no reason. They're cooking it, you know, but it's a ritualistic meal that they're going to have in the honor of the god. So it's not like, because it sounds like a terrible waste until you realize they sit down and cook it.
Mm.
Right, okay, well then fair enough. It's not that big a deal, is it?
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, and there's a long tradition of that sort of thing. So sometimes in sort of when Rome was extremely affluent and powerful, so like 1st, 2nd century AD or something, there'd just be lots and lots of, and they're all the best, biggest bulls that they could get their hands on at the time. Just great feasting and lots of drinking. I mean, revelry, really, sort of drunken silliness. So over the millennia, Christmas has gone through, whatever you want to call it, Christmas, has gone through various phases of being really serious and austere, and then just silly drunkenness.
Yeah, now you sacrifice turkeys.
And so Saturnalia was certainly in that more sort of ribald tradition, and not particularly serious. It wasn't supposed to be taken really sort of seriously.
Different to the sort of Victorian Christmases, isn't it?
Yeah, where they're sort of quite austere, quite straight-laced stuff. Yeah. And the idea that it's sort of, because our modern Christmas is very much based around the child's experience, isn't it? Having presents and things, and a lot of it is sort of all in aid of children now. That's quite modern. Christmas, and certainly Saturnalia, was not really child-friendly. It was about, being drunk quite a lot and gambling for some reason. Saturnalia was heavily associated with gambling.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and we don't really have that at our Christmas, do we? It's not really anything,
we're not really in the gambling culture, though, are we?
Yeah.
We kind of think gambling's a bit wrong, but the Romans used to gamble all the time, didn't they?
Yeah, dice. Mm. Dice was the big one. All sorts of Roman accounts always talk about playing dice and gambling on dice. And part of the thing was that if you didn't really have money, you just, you know, like when you have a game of cards and you want to bet on it, but no one really wants to lose or win any money. So you just make up little counters or matchsticks or whatever.
Pennies or something.
Yeah. So they would do that with nuts, apparently, small nuts. And everyone would be gambling on dice. And so apparently one of the refrains was that, oh, can't wait for Saturnalia and gambling with nuts. And they would talk about that. Apparently that all year round, people would be looking forward to Saturnalia and playing games where they're gambling with nuts.
Okay.
So that was a big thing. Or the other thing, they would shout "Yo Saturnalia" or "Io." I think it's pronounced "Yo." "Yo Saturnalia." Everyone, it's just like saying "Merry Christmas," but you just sort of shout at each other all the time, to strangers and stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
And there's accounts of people that were sort of not really into the spirit or didn't really care about it, just being really annoyed that outside their windows they can just hear drunkards screaming "Yo Saturnalia" all night, and they just annoyed them.
Nothing new under the sun, is there? You know, drunk people coming from the pub, "Merry Christmas, shut up."
One of the other things was that you would wear hats. But they would be... Well, in Rome, one of the things is that if you were a slave, quite often you'd have a shaved head. Or if you were newly emancipated from being a slave, you would shave your head. A full citizen wouldn't really ever shave their head. That wasn't sort of done. But there's a sort of a class in between full citizens and slaves, freedmen. You know, you're certainly not a slave, but you're not the full citizen yet. They would quite often wear sort of red hats, red caps. They look a little bit like... again, in the French Revolution, you know, sort of those revolutionary red sort of felt caps look a bit like that.
Right.
And that was sort of, not always, but sort of associated with what freedmen would wear.
Right.
And so one of the things is that nearly everyone would wear these red caps. So it's sort of disappearing the line between a slave and a citizen. You know, that sort of idea.
Temporarily for this period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that gets us on to sort of one of the main, or one perhaps one of the most famous things people know about Saturnalia, is this role reversal thing they had, where during Saturnalia, the most extreme versions are that the slaves, the owners waited on the slaves. A lot of accounts seem to say...
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. But that's sort of an extreme version of it. Right. I think what's much more likely is that... the slaves were allowed to be a bit more informal with their masters, or that they would still cook the food, but the masters would serve it at least. And so what it seems like actually is just like with Christmas nowadays, different households, different families are more or less into it, right? You know, you've got one house on the street where their whole garden and front house is just filled with lights. And there's another house where they don't, they're not really doing anything for it at all, more or less. So it'd be the same with that. Some households, well, there's one account, I can't remember whether it was Cicero or someone. They said, oh, well, I'll serve them on one particular day, but not, nothing beyond that. And I won't allow them to be insolent towards me. Right. And then other houses where they really sort of lent into it.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No